Hey, everybody, I'm Tim Miller, and this is FY Pod. I'm just going to be real with you. We're always real on FY Pod, so I'm just going to just tell you the truth, which is I don't really know what the hell we're going to do with this page and with this feed while Cameron is exploring life as a congressperson. We have multiple potential bulwark people running for Congress in the same district. George Conway is out just a little bit ago. Before he taped, saying he's flirting with that race. I've never thought I'd have two colleagues in the same congressional race potentially, but we live in a strange world. So, Cameron's out doing his thing. There's been a lot about what we've done over the last almost year that I think is good. There's stuff I wish we could have done a little better. I think we're funny and cute together, so the material's been good. I think that we haven't quite achieved what I wanted as far as like reaching youths. I hear from youths. We have some youths that are listening. I do notice that a lot of the comments are from, grandmas that are like interested in what's happening in their grandchildren's lives, which is great. That's great. Whatever. That's cool. We appreciate everyone still listen, but that wasn't the original targeted audience. So that I'm working on figuring out when we relaunch, what our strategy should be. In the meantime, there's something that we've done really well, though, which is the guests on this show have been unbelievable. I mean, I feel like in 20 years, like there'll be entire cabinets worth of people that were FY Pod guests this year. We have like the best Zoomers and young millennial cuspers out there. If you go back and look at our guest roster, everything from crypto Marxists to Steve Bannonite nationalists. I mean, we've touched all the bases. And so over the next month, we get the holidays, I'm going to bring back some of them, hang out, chat. We'll do some FY Pod-ish stuff. And then we'll have a fresh plan for y'all in the new year. In the meantime, one of my favorites, maybe my favorite, I don't know. You don't want to rank your children. One of my favorites of that roster of wonderful Zoomer guests. She has the rebuild on Substack. She's shitposting on X a lot. Her name's Tara Hoops. She's back. What is up, girl?
Hi. Thanks for having me. Love the introduction of being called a youth still. I just turned 27 like over a week ago, and it's been weighing on me. I feel like I've hit my boomer stage of life. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's you. That's part of it because you got married too,
I know.
So you're making grown-up choices. Cameron turned 25 on Wednesday. So happy birthday, Cameron.
Happy birthday, Cameron. We miss you already.
He's becoming unk, kind of. I guess when we reboot this, when it comes back, we need someone even younger, maybe. Maybe it's me, and then Cameron is unk for like a 19-year-old.
Did you say as unk?
Yeah.
I didn't know we're doing like the Gen Alpha terms.
I mean, he's looking. He's kind of unk for Gen Alpha, I would say. No.
No, he is.
Don't you think?
I don't know what that makes me though.
Because auntie, if he's unk,
no. Oh my God! Now I'm the brown auntie. I've hit that stage.
Now you're Sauron's brown auntie.
I thought I had more time.
You're youthful and whatever. It's all relative. We're doing the best we can out here. Well, it's good for you to be back. Are you a substitute teacher? Are you excited about that, being the substitute teacher?
I was literally messaging with Cam the other day, and I was like, I feel like the substitute teacher that is coming in when like the favorite teacher is gone. They're going to be like, oh my God, free pod. Oh, that's not Cam. But I will do my best, and we will remember Cam during this trying time as he seriously considers running for possible New York 12. Yes, we can.
Are you going to be able to, like Cameron, vacillate back and forth between like, deep feelings and like oversharing about your personal life into like 4-minute long soliloquies about Bibi Netanyahu? Are you going to be able to manage that? Or are you just going to bring your own style?
I think I'll just try my own style and see how that goes. I don't know. I feel like once you hit like long form convo, you're saying things that you did not think you would say out loud. And then you just start saying whatever comes to mind. That is my issue in life. I have raging ADHD. Some people think I'm like just a fast talker. It's just like, there's no stopping me at times. So
that's the goal about a long form podcast. You want people to say, like, for example, earlier this week, I was taping the Daily Pod with Alex Wagner. We're talking about the Epstein file release. And we're doing most of what we're supposed to do as political commentators, talking about the political implications, what this means for Trump, the cover-up, the scandal, blah, 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 the messaging. And but then we start talking about the emails between like Larry Summers and who's the other guy? Farkas, Jonathan Farkas and Epstein and these old men who are like being like, Jeffrey, the girls don't like me. Jeffrey, these hookers are being mean to me. And it's like, and so we ended up in like an 8 minute long tangent talking about what we're going to do about sad old men that need love. And like that's an unanswerable question. And I was blurting out, this was not in the outline. I was blurting out, maybe we do need AI sex bots for sad old men.
I was just thinking that as you said that, I was like, I don't know. I don't want to subject real life women to that. Like maybe
we need AI sex robots for Larry Summers.
I mean, also in that email, I don't know if there's more of his. I just saw the one and it just had a weird, very off color tangent about women. And then in caps, do not share this insight was almost chef's kiss. It was just like, these are the people who we are supposed to think know more than us. It's genuinely something to think about.
Their spelling was very bad. I get it. No, okay. We all need love. I get it. You know, I get it. Everybody does. You were just talking about your aging crisis. We're all dealing with this in our own different ways. But, you know, if you're a 65-year-old man, you know, maybe find age-appropriate lover. Or maybe find somebody who wants to be there with you because you're charmed, because you're nice and a caring person. You know, that
maybe
might be something.
Maybe just be personable.
Maybe you can offer something else besides, you know, because Farkas in his email is talking about how he's short and bald and old. And it's just like, okay, but you have other traits you would think. You're wealthy and connected. Maybe you can bring a woman to part. Maybe there's some woman out there that would want to be there with you.
I don't think women care about height.
Rather than being sad, sad old man talking about calling these poor young women hookers and and asking a child sex trafficker. Anyway, we're off topic again. I want to talk to you about the Groypers.
Okay.
For people who are listening who don't know, I guess everybody knows at this point, but in case you're one of the ones who blessedly are unaware, it's Nick Fuentes' little following, these young little Nazis. And the word Nazis is maybe losing its specificity at this point. It's getting thrown around a lot. In the case of these young men, they are explicitly white identitarian. They want, so you can call that whatever you want, but they're racist. They think that white identity is important and they care about themselves. Young men, some of them are incels, involuntary celibate, some of them are volcels. They're very nasty. They talk about how women want to be raped, all this sort of stuff. Anyway, Rod Dreher, who I can bring something to the table on the spot on this one as an elder millennial, because he was kind of a big player in the discourse 10 years ago and then moved to Hungary. But he's a Christian conservative type that might be a little gay. Turns out he might be gay, but that happens. Yeah, they all are. Yeah. Anyway, he was a big evangelical Christian conservative writer 10, 15 years ago. Kind of out of the picture, got out of the picture, went to Hungary. He's mobbed up there with Viktor Orban now. He's going to the Russian baths with other guys and, you know, whatever he's doing out there, good for him. He came back to D.C. on like a fact-finding mission with what's happening with the Christian conservative movement now. He went and met with a lot of young guys who are interns, see how they're doing, you know, wanted to check in with them. And then he wrote a Substack about it. And I want to read a little bit of it for you. The claim I first floated on the Substack last week when I was quoting a DC insider who said that in his estimation, between 30 and 40% of Zoomers who work in official Republican Washington are fans of Nick Fuentes, I found out that's true. It was confirmed multiple times by Zoomers who live in that world. What they like most of all is his rage and his willingness to violate taboos. I asked one astute Zoomer what the Groypers actually wanted. He said, they don't have any demands. They just want to tear everything down. Then he went on to explain in calm, rational detail, while his generation is so utterly screwed, the problems are mostly economic and material. They don't have good career prospects. They'll never be able to buy a home. Many are heavily indebted with student loans, blah, 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 blah. Okay. I want to get into the substance of the critique in a second about the extent to which that's true on economic matters. But first, you hung out. You're in D.C. You're out and about. You're locked down now. You're cuffed now. But like,
I never got that So I lived in Navy Yard at one point in my life in DC, and it was one of the new apartment buildings, which they kind of just like shuffled every young staffer who worked on the Hill. And I want to say this was around 2021. So you still have people coming off of like Trump one.
Yeah. And Navy Yard code's kind of Republican as far as it, where you can get an apartment. I just, for people who don't know, like in DC, it's not like all Republican segregated, but it's kind of like, if you're a young Republican staffer, Navy Yard's one of the neighborhoods you would go for, where maybe some of the young Democrat staffers might go for more like a Bloomingdale or a Shaw.
And I did not know that moving there until I was new to DC, like didn't know that many people, and started meeting people in my neighborhood and like apartment. And I noticed that these people were like very conservative. It was kind of at the rise of like barstool conservatism. And these are the type of people who would like in public, like depending on who they were talking to, had like very normal stances, but in private had very harsh, like far right views. There's something that actually will never leave my mind. I will never forget this. Right after Roe v. Wade was overturned, I'm opening my Instagrams, just clicking through stories, and I see a video of a group of these people who live in Navy Yard, like swinging a pinata, celebrating that this is the best news that has ever happened. And I was like, oh, 4chan people are like,
Fuentes famously, when that happened, did the Your Body, My Choice thing, which became very in vogue.
And it just like, I'm someone who was like very online. So I had a spinal fusion when I was like 13. So I had to like learn how to walk again. I was like not in school for like half of a year. And from that, it was like obviously a very like,
you and Jack Schlossberg, do you know you and Jack Schlossberg had that in common?
No, I did not.
I don't know if it's exactly a spinal fusion, but it was a similar type thing where he couldn't walk for a long time. He was online. Yet another person in the New York 12 primary, potentially, arrival of camp. So we can't be too kind to him right now. You never know.
No, we can't.
I did not know that about you. So what grade was that? Like seventh grade?
Between seventh and eighth, I want to say. It did lead into a summer. And I remember it was like early spring when it happened, and then summer came around and my parents just like shipped me off to Morocco to be on my grandmother's farm. So I was like very isolated from the world. Also because like we did not have like, I didn't have a phone with like service. I didn't even have a phone at that time. So I was just like very deep on like Tumblr pages and that just like, and like watching like anime and like movies and all the time. I was like the definition of like an online weirdo. So like it boggles my mind as someone who was also placed on the internet at such a young age without like parental supervision and like just did not have like social contact. And I still was able to come out of that thinking like, no, people should have rights. Like we should not delve into like Nazism and all this. And these are people who have lived like seemingly like normal lives. If you meet them, you would not expect them to have these views. When I first met them, I would not expect them to have these views. And then, like I said, that was like such a turning point for me to open like my Instagram stories and see that, and had to like unfollow every single one of them, because like not to be one of those like, you know, bleeding liberals, like I can't be friends with you, we have differing views, but like if you're celebrating the overturn of like Roe v. Wade, like that's a whole different level. Like we just have different morals at that point.
We're going to get into that in the mailbag at the end of a related mailbag question. But there's an interesting thing about the Groypers, and Fuentes specifically advocates for this. I think something people miss if they don't follow him that closely, which is like he wants his followers to go to D.C., to live in Navy Yard, to work in congressional offices, and to like not reveal all of their views. Right. Because, not that it's like, oh, a secret. Part of it maybe is it's a little titillating. It's like we're undercover. We're infiltrating the establishment. But part of it is like he's like he knows how somebody with like openly racist views is ostracized. Right. And like it's like part of the idea of the, I hate to even give them the credit called a movement, but idea of whatever, like their goal is to say, OK, no, we want people like us, these young racist young men in positions of power, and we do that by like concealing and going to DC and doing these jobs. And so like that I think is like a feature, right? Not about like where where people get surprised, right? Because you expect it's like, oh, you think like these are just the super weird online guys, and like you would just know if you met them, like, oh, that's a Fuentes type. But like, that's I think the key insight of Rob Deere's thing. It's like, that's not really true. Like, there are a lot of guys in and it also is not, it's not like necessarily you're a Fuentes person or you're not, you know, like they're also, he is just like in the ether for a lot of these young guys where like, you know, you're watching it for fun on the side and you're getting a little, you agree with some of it, not all of it. You're getting a little radicalized. You're laughing about it. You know, I don't know. Is that your kind of experience, your friend's experience? Do you even have friends that are in that world enough anymore to know?
In the Groper's world? God, no.
No, I just mean like in DC, I can not hang out with Republican staffers enough. Not like going to Groper meetups. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
like to get a sense for like whether that's true.
The beauty of being in Los Angeles is that I get to be very removed from the day-to-day of DC things. I would say a lot of my friends like here don't even know what I do for a living. I'll sometimes post like a news clip and they will like text me. I'm like, why would they ask you about that? Like my friends don't know. It's a whole different world.
That's great. It's healthy.
I can see what he is saying to be true in DC specifically, but I do not want to subscribe to the notion that many or all or like a large sum of men are falling down like the alt-right like pipeline. DC is different because DC is probably the only place you could say like Twitter is like real life. Those are people who are looking for power in some way. They're think about like all of like the debate kids, the theater kids, people who want to be the front of attention and think they have something specific and unique to them to deliver on that. And these gropers, like the Fuentes type people, also believe that, you know, like the establishment and society and even now Trump they're turning against, like, are it's standing in the way of this, but we have something special. So we are going to look past that, look past all the people who have failed us before. And this is where we will be able to thrive. So I can see it being true in the city of DC specifically. I want to be optimistic in the sense like men across the nation are not subscribing to that.
So yeah, so let's get into that broader question. So it's kind of a long clip, but I think it's important. I want people to bear with us. So part of the reason why this is like in the conversation now also is because Tucker interviewed Fuentes and it created this whole infighting on the right where like some Ben Shapiro's and others were like chastising Tucker for doing it. And then Megyn Kelly tried to like broker a peace and she failed. But I was interested in the interview that Kelly did of Tucker, where Tucker was asked to explain himself. He gave one answer about like why he felt it was, and Tucker's full of shit. So I want to caveat this with a grain of salt that like Tucker's full of shit, but I think this is at least an interesting, like that he thinks that this is a good rationalization is interesting in itself, whether or not he actually believes it. Let's listen to Tucker explain himself to Megyn Kelly.
I kind of think of Fuentes in terms of like what place does he occupy in our, what does he say about our society? And I'm not making excuses for anybody else's views. I'm just saying as a factual matter, if this is the most popular person among young men, young white men, then we need to like start thinking about why that is. And we need to reflect on what we have collectively done to young men, which is destroy them, actually. And no one wants to say that because no one wants to take any responsibility at all for anything ever. No one ever wants to repent. They all want to cast stones. They don't see the plank in their own eye. This is including me. It's just humans are like this. And they want to be like Nazi. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, great, great. But like, how did this happen?
Why are they listening to him?
Kind of.
Can I ask you, so...
And part of the reason is because the Republican Party completely betrayed its voters by obsessing over Israel. That's just a fact. Like, what is this? It's a country of 9 million people.
It's a lot there. The fact that I want to just talk about two things. One is it's like funny that the premise is that, okay, this person matters because young white men are struggling so much. We've destroyed them. And I think it's worth exploring that premise, but whether that's true or not. But then I get amused and want to keep the clip running because it's like when he's trying to come up with an example of the ways that we've destroyed young white men and made them and ostracized them, like the first thing that comes to his mind is Israel because he's obsessed with Israel now. And he's just like, and we've abandoned them with our support of Israel. And it's just kind of like, is that what? I mean, that's maybe at least a defensible thing on Iraq, right? That like we abandoned young men and we sent them off to this war to die, and so they're pissed. Like that would have been a sensible thing to say like 15 years ago, and maybe it's true that young Gen Z white men are anti-Israel. Okay. But like, that is why they're turning to Nick Fuentes. Like this, it is nonsensical to me. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's kind of the thing that like sounds smart. Like, oh, yeah, young men are in crisis, and so we have to listen to why they've turned to the, and like, I listen to that and I'm like, no, actually, like, being a racist contrarian cunt was like always kind of appealing to young boys, like in every era. Nothing is new in the universe, and I don't think there's anything special about the neocons Israel policy or about, you know, the state of young men now that is causing this. But I don't know. What do you think?
I can see younger generations being upset right now, period, based on having a lot of economic insecurity. That I can understand. The idea that the Israeli lobby just came, I just have not, it's such like an online talking point that we have now spread out into everything, because it used to be a very far left issue when it came to Israel and Palestine and the entire ongoing war. And it was never something that conservatives were ever, if anything, they were so Islamophobic, they were happy to like, so I'm just like very, I'm not caught up on like where this actually, when the turn happened. I think right now you have a bunch of podcasters who are just following what is trending on Twitter right now. And Twitter is a website that is just incentivizing rage bait every day. I personally think we need to get rid of monetization on Twitter. I will give back the $200 I get per month or whatever I get, because it's just not necessary for us to have a more civil society, because clearly it has spillover effects, or you have people like Tucker Carlson who are just like spouting these ideas that are coming from accounts that are getting paid to say these things over and over again until it like makes sense. They have all these like bot accounts going out there, like, where you're not even sure if it's like a true statement. So I don't believe young men are becoming gropers because of that alone. I also want to just like put out the side note right there. I am a woman. I don't want to speak for all men right there. Not to be the whole like, they're going to hate me now. but I just can't see that happening. I think these people just feel extremely disenfranchised by institutions that they feel like are failing them. They feel like they did everything right. They went to college, they took on the debt, and things aren't going the way that they have planned. And then I hear, I've only ever heard clips of Fuentes on my timeline. I try to scroll past it. I don't want to like muddy my brain up too much with it, to be honest with you. Smart. It's not safe. But the whole reason why he says like a lot of the reason why men aren't doing well is because of like women doing well. They have such a zero sum mindset where it's like, well, now women have started working more and taking jobs away from men. And then you also include some immigrants in there, and you also include some other marginalized community. Like, you just have everyone except for white men doing slightly better. And then these people take it as an example for why our society as a whole is failing. And now he's just, just before this call, like, I went on Fuentes' page for like the first time, and I saw like his branding is all like America first. And I'm like, what America are you putting first right now? Like, I just don't understand it. At the seat.
Heritage Americans.
Yeah. Like, I'm honestly a little glad they're being more upfront about it, because it was something that they were trying to keep quiet to exist in polite society. But like, it's also insane at the same time, if the factional debates happening right now with Republicans are if we should include Nazis or not, I never want to hear complaining about factional debates on Democrats ever again. Oh my God. If what we are discussing is whether we should do zoning policy or not is the biggest issue we have on the Democratic side, like, I never want to hear anyone complain about that ever again, because like, this is insane, like, that we're even like speaking about this almost.
So, Cole, just really quick on the Israel thing, and I want to, Cameron isn't here, so I'll represent the Cameron view. I mean, part of the reason why this became a bigger and bigger issue on both sides is that, like, just the horrific way in that which Israel was prosecuting the war after they were attacked on October 7th, right? And so, like, this is getting into people's feeds, and I understand why people are upset. So I don't want to like minimize that. Like, I think it's possible, certainly, that young men and young women, of course, of left and right and whatever, are upset about this from a genuine sense. They've been seeing these images. They are pissed. They don't want America to be supporting Israel. I understand that. It's that next step, which is like, And this is the reason why young men have been destroyed and now are turning to Nick Fuentes. They're like, I just don't get. Like, there are a lot of people that are don't like Israel who are mainstream. There are a lot of people who don't like Israel who have not turned to Nick Fuentes. Like, do you like using that? Like, Tucker's like obsession with that. And Nick Fuentes has been possible since before since before October 7th. I mean, Donald Trump had lunch with him before October 7th. So the correlation isn't there for me, right? So there's got to be something else, right? And then the other thing that people always turn to is economic. Like, oh, we've destroyed young men. They aren't doing as well. That's why I want to go back to Dreher really quick. He writes, they don't have good career prospects. They'll probably never be able to buy a home. Many are heavily indebted with student loans that they're advised by authorities to take out. And the idea that they are likely to marry and start families seem increasingly remote. And I look at this again, and we've done a lot of this in the show. Like, I'm sympathetic to some elements of like the Gen Z cost issue, like in job availability and how expensive it is ever to live in a lot of cities. But I think that a lot of this is just rationalization for these guys. It's like, I don't want the idea that they're likely to marry and start families seem remote. I mean, you got married, you're starting a family. I know young people, like, it's not, I don't know. Like, I think about my grandparents, you know, like my grandfather was a real estate guy. My other grandfather's an accountant. Like, those, so it's whatever. Those are all regular jobs. So, like, neither of them went to fancy colleges. One of them didn't go to college, went to regular colleges, you know, had big families. They lived in like the suburban St. Louis, like ex-urban St. Louis. And they had families, they went on vacations. Their vacations were not fancy. Like, they had one summer a year to Florida or whatever in the car, in the station wagon. It's the fucking 1960s, you know?
Yeah. 50s.
Like, people, they go back to that and say, oh, we can't have that now. And I'm just like, that just isn't true. Like, if you grow up right now in St. Louis and go get an undergrad from UMSL or Mizzou or whatever, like some state college, and just take a regular job, you can live in fucking exurban Kansas City or St. Louis right now, and you can afford it, and you can meet somebody else from Missouri if you want to, and you can marry them, you can start a family. Like, that is available to you still. It's like, it's that people want to, like, whatever. I think people want to live in New York, or they want to travel on trips and go to Europe. And I don't begrudge anybody their wants, but it's just like, I just kind of reject this idea. And you tell me, because you pay attention to economics this more closely, that like, that there is something so uniquely challenging about the economy right now for mm-hmm. young men, as opposed to 60 years ago, that they have no choice but to turn to Groyperism. I just reject that.
I reject that to a point of it being on the national level. I don't think every single man, if they get bogged down in life, immediately becomes a groper. I refuse to think that lowly of the male species. But I think they should feel validated in their concerns. And I think a lot of it travels back to distrust in institutions. It used to be you would get married and you would have a kid, whether or not if you were even sure you were like fully ready to do so. Now we are people who overtly plan before buying a house. We're buying houses way later in life because we can't afford to just buy a house outright. But also, like, people are very scared to get themselves locked into a mortgage. And also the idea of having a family and expanding their family seems like something they need to have savings in the bank. I think of my parents who, they had my sister in Morocco. They then moved there. I was born, I want to say, like a year after them living there. My parents are on work visas at this time. They're living in like a studio apartment off of Myrtle Avenue. Only my dad is working. My mom is not working. And they're in a country where they are trying to learn the language. And my mom still thinks this is a lovely time to welcome a child into that place. And they just had such a trust in the American dream.
Turned out great.
It did. I am very lucky for my life. But it's because my parents believe in the American dream. It's because they believe that you can come here. My dad worked hard. He was still is a small business owner, and entrepreneur. And they had such faith in the system. Like, no, I'm doing everything right. I'm paying my taxes. I'm working hard. Like, there's no reason for me to not have kids here. People now have such distrust in institutions where they would rather feel stable themselves before going out there and then building on that foundation, which is completely understandable. I think when it comes to marriage and having kids, those are two different things. I myself don't feel ready to have a kid anytime soon. I think I want to cement my career. I'm 27.
You'd be a great mother.
I do think I will be. I'm so great to my nieces. I have so many younger siblings. I'm going to be an amazing mother, but I don't want to do that until like mid-30s. I have so much time because I would love to focus on my career first for a little bit. I also have the spinal issue thing. So whenever I have a kid, I feel like I'm going to be like out for a little bit. So I also keep that in mind.
I want to protect your spine.
Yeah. A lot of women think in the same vein though. Like some people do want to get married. It's the issue of finding a partner. I know I hear from a lot of my girlfriends. This is all anecdotal evidence, of course. But when it comes to having kids, that's something they're ready to push down a bit more because we have started to slowly become a very individualized society. Like, again, I revert back to like my upbringing. Was raised very Muslim. In Islam, you grew up on like a very like community oriented like religion. You don't think about yourself. You're always thinking about other people. I like had to train my brain the second I got to college. Like, what do I want to do? What do I want to focus on, etc., in order to get where I want to go. If you don't think that way, you're fully thinking about community. You're thinking about expanding your community. Like, how can you do to be better? And that's why you might see like people in, who are more religious, who are more open to having kids. And you might see people who are not, who are still focused on making sure their individual self is set up. So I think when men are not feeling like their individual life is set up, they are going to be very hesitant to feel like they can also now be a provider for a child if they also have that distrust in the institution to back them up.
Okay, Ross, doubt that.
I know it was
you are making the opposite suggestion as him, but working for the same premise. The premise of if you believe that, you know, we have an issue with our birth rate or whatever, natalism, that the answer is that our society needs to find God again, that we need to be more religious. Oh, people are too selfish.
No, that's not where I was going. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
I know you aren't saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying you're working from the same premise that this is lack of religiosity is driving down birth rate. He is saying that's a bad thing. You're saying that's good. That's fine. Individualism, it's, you know, whatever, you find fulfillment in yourself. Yeah. But the premise is the same, yes, kind of, which is interesting. And the other thing is that premise takes us away from the economic side, because economics is really more what you're focused on. And I do, like, what is your sense? And this gets us into the affordability discourse. Like, I am 100% like the housing affordability thing is a nightmare. And, mm-hmm, and I just think that there are so many downstream negative effects, like particularly for young people related to how housing unaffordability. Like, and so I'm like a radical YIMBY, which I know we share. Outside of that, like the rest of the affordability story is a little more complicated, I think. I don't know. The student loan story, I think, is pretty real. Like people who've taken on big student loan debts, I think that's real, of course. Outside of that, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Things are more expensive, but like it's not, if you just look at the data about like Gen Z, you know, average kind of income and wealth accumulation, it's not worse than my generation, really. Things are more expensive, you know, so you got to figure all that out. Like, what's your sense? Like, how do you disentangle all that about like what's a real crisis? What is, you know, stuff that we're using as an excuse to make the boys feel better?
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me right now, we also have not had recent economic data come about. Like, everyone is kind of going blindly, and I think, right, that is making the vibe session worse. For example, like consumer sentiment was like the worst it's been since like the 1950s. I saw someone make the joke on Twitter, like, we're past vibe session. We're hitting vibe pression. Like, people are not happy with how the economy feels to them. But if you look at some of like the polling and the crosstabs, people will be like, well, like, how is this affecting you directly? People are like, oh, I'm kind of okay. It's not that bad. Like, I'm not really getting affected.
It's crazy. I talked to Chris Hayes about this earlier this week. It's like the idea that consumer confidence would be worse now than it is after the housing crash is insane. Like, for this is where, you know, I can bring again, once again, my millennial experience. I lived there. I was there. Saw it. I experienced it. I had friends with parents who had underwater mortgages and all this sort of thing. Like, it's not good. I'm not saying things are great now, but it is pretty weird. Like, what do you attribute that to, that everybody is so much more unhappy now than they were then?
I think it also derives from the fact that you have a president who is single-handedly like turning the dial to 1,000 when it comes to uncertainty. Anytime you have a long form interview with him, he is going to say something that you have never expected him to say, or something that is almost like gibberish, or something like a crazy old man would say. So you're thinking like, oh wow, the people in charge, like, he won a cost of living election. I feel like we all have collective amnesia. 2024 was a cost of living election. People were very upset with prices during the Biden admin. And I am of the mind of thought that people viewed Kamala as very akin to Biden, so they decided to vote for someone else. And the one thing that he ran on, he is just not making a priority. He cares about the East Wing. He cares about his ballrooms. So when you feel like you're seeing all these things about tariffs and prices increasing all the time, housing, even though it is one compartment of, you know, weakening supply, making prices going extremely up, it's a large part of that. Housing is a very large aspect of how we view the economy as consumers. So when that's bad, and you compound it with the fact that you have headlines going everywhere of like tariffs impacting us in X, Y, and Z way, the constant overflow of that, on top of the fact that you have him and his admin changing their minds every few day of what we're about to do with economic policy. And now for the past 2 months, we don't even have any data going out there. When people feel uncertain, they are going to be way more unhappy and risk averse to how they're viewing everything. It's the same way companies are going to be a bit more risk averse when it comes to hiring. The last time we had data, everything was like, it was cooling at a very large amount. I mean, even the last Powell Fed meeting, the one thing he said that it was an interesting balance when it came to labor supply and demand is that both were going down, but they were like equaling each other out. And it's like, well, you know, the labor supply, well, people are just getting deported and companies don't really know how to plan because, you know, everything is changing by the second. So these are all compounding factors at the fact that one singular man who holds a lot of power is, and Cheryl said this when you last spoke to her, is coming at you to ensure that you do not have access to economic opportunity when you specifically voted for him for that at hand. I think immigration was a very close second for some people. I think people were very upset on that, but I'm only going to look at the economy in that sense. And I do believe that was a prioritizing factor for people.
Probably seems like it was a mistake to elect him president, I guess, but that's maybe for another day. So the question is, the Democrats are responding to this. There's this big, you mentioned the Republican factional debate. We're talking about this. The Republican factional debate is, are Nazis okay? Do we like Nazis? Should we be pro-Nazi? Should we be neutral Nazi, anti-Nazi? The Democratic factional debate is, okay, we've all agreed now we need to care about affordability. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a mistake to talk about how great Bidenomics was, regardless of what you think about the merits of the actual policies, just because of the nature of the vibes. Maybe we should be more responsive to people's concerns and worries. Then the question is, okay, how do you do that? What does it look like policy-wise? What does it look like talking-wise? And as part of this factional debate, the Zohran kind of DSA left wing, you know, the tendency online at least is to say that like that's where all the energy is. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that is what young people want. That young people are either crypto Nazis or their DSA, and like that's just where we are right now. And as you mentioned, I talked to Mikey Sherrill earlier this week, and she ran an explicitly kind of normie center left campaign around affordability. And I asked her about this. Let's just play a little bit.
But then I'm at one rally with a group of teenage boys, and I have teenage boys. And so I thought
all the teenage boys were MAGA groypers now. Is that not right?
Well, this is how quickly things shift, right? As people understand economic opportunity and college kids are worried about jobs. So I see these teenage boys and I thought they were sort of trolling me because, like I said, I have teenage boys, but they're like so excited. They're taking all these selfies in the audience. They're even doing like hearts like this. And I'm going, what are those boys? You know, are they? And so
it is a TikTok thing.
I was like, are they going to like put out some video like how much I suck? Yeah. So I asked afterwards, I said, I noticed those gentlemen, you know, kind of right front left. What was that about? And they go, oh, they have been knocking doors for you. They are so excited. I'm like, wow. Okay. I'm like, we're hitting it.
She talks about how she was kind of surprised how many young people are going there. Now, again, I'm going, this is not polling data. This is a political candidate saying she was surprised to see high school boys at our event. So, okay, it is what it'd be to be excited about it. But like, what's your sense that like is there, as a 27-year-old pushing, kind of whatever, what would you call yourself? Neo-lib, center-left, pro-growth, abundancy. How about abundancy? Abundancy, economic affordability.
To people who are not into labels, I'm just saying normie dem.
Normie affordability capitalist. Yeah. Is that landable, do you think? I don't know. What do you think about Mikey?
One thing that I will say is that I love how she spent the beginning of her campaign going back out there to persuade people back into the tent. I think a bit of why we lost is just like we got way too comfortable. We just assumed people were going to be there for us. And Zoomers kind of like, just like saw like right through that. They're like, I'm new to life. What do you mean you've been there for me my entire life? Like, I'm so used to having all of this amazing quality of life, like advocate for me, like, persuade me, sell something to me. So I love that she made sure that she had foundational roots within her constituency to go out there and actually speak to people about that. And I love that one of the first things that she came out with was an affordability agenda, focusing on to making your average day-to-day life better. And the fact that that was going, I think she had young men, this is off exit polling, so exit polling is always wonky, but just like off like 14 points from there. I'm just quoting from my mind.
Yeah, it was a huge, whatever, even if it was off, like the gap, and you shouldn't rely on the actual numbers and exit polls, but you can learn about trends. And like the trend for young men from Trump in New Jersey in 24 to Cheryl in 25 was significant.
Yeah. And I had a tweet just like similar to what we were discussing before, is like, I don't believe we had a mass amounts of men just shift to the alt-right pipeline and they fully voted based on these culture war ideologies and that they didn't care about like financial security. I believe men, a lot of them believe they have to be providers someday. So like economic security to them matters much more than to other people, like especially when they're young and they're trying to establish themselves in life. The fact that she made it focused on having access to opportunity to move yourself up in the ranks, that spoke to them. They want someone to talk to them directly and say, like, I understand that we did you guys wrong. She fully said, she's like, I'm not doing another 10-page paper. I'm not doing another listening study. We were wrong before. I want all Democrats to say that. I think all Democrats who do well are going to be people to say, to come from an outsider's mindset, to detach themselves a little bit from the establishment and say, what we were doing before clearly did not work and did not resonate with you. So I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to be action oriented. I'm going to focus on your future. I'm going to focus on reforms, no matter how minuscule they are. If they make your life better, I'm going to be there fighting for that. And I think she did a great job at doing so. I even love the fact that when it came to like fights against the admin, she was like, I'm going to pick and choose because I know what actually matters to my constituents. She was like, I have people like you to discuss like the East Wing ballroom. So I love that she was able to differentiate what is just noise online versus priorities from her voters and her constituents.
Yeah. The only sad part about the interview for me was when she said, she was like, look, I knew I wanted to talk about affordability. You want to talk about specific tangible things that people care about. Some things didn't resonate with people. So we moved on to other things. And I was like, well, what are some of the things that didn't resonate? And she was like, well, it was disappointing for me because I still want to do it. But the building a lot of housing thing, you get pushback from people because regular people are NIMBYs. We're doing our best.
Yeah.
The YIMBY crowd, we're on the rise. You can see momentum for us. In the YIMBY world, like it's taking off, but even still, when it gets to specific examples, regular people just don't want new apartment complexes in their neighborhood. I see this every once in a while. I have to. One of my besties lives around the corner. We were talking about this the other day, and they're building a Trader Joe's with some apartments around it. And just we're just having conversation. He's just like, "Yeah, the traffic though," and I was just like, "Bro, it's not going to be that bad. Okay. We're not in Los Angeles, like Terra Hoops. Like it's fine. It's okay. Like we can handle it." So people just have a natural NIMBY instinct. It's a human instinct to kind of overcome. One person who is shout out to the DSA side. One person who is trying to do NIMBY stuff from the left is Zohran, the hotness of the moment. The big news this week is, in New York, there's this thing called Elizabeth Street Garden, which is kind of a funny thing. People should Google if they don't know the backstory. It was like there was like a museum around there, and then it was privately funded, and then like the sculptures in the museum got put outside in the garden, and for there was a period of time where only the people that lived there could see it, but then they opened up to the public. And anyway, it's kind of a mundane sort of situation, but it's like for a while they've been wanting to put housing for low-income seniors there. Mm-hmm. And Zoran's like, no, we're going to do it. Like, we're going to, sorry to the Elizabeth Street Garden, which, you know, we appreciate gardens, but like the sculptures can go somewhere else. We're going to put up the low income, the housing for low income seniors here, because we need housing for low income seniors in fucking New York City. And so shout out Zoran for that. But Eric Adams on his way out is trying to block him.
So I found that to be, so I posted about that and I was like, the first thought I had is like, you just gotta be kidding me. And I got a reply that I thought was so funny. It was like, listen, I am annoyed by this, but like, I kind of respect it on a level of pettiness. And I thought about it. I was like, this is the most New York thing Eric Adams can do on his way out. Like, let me go take this one little project that like finally got people from the Yimbys to start like rooting for you. The first little bit, like he started moderating, like, let me go take that from you. Like you, like, let me win this one last battle. So I was like, from a pettiness level, like, damn, he got him. But also I just want a broader sense, very much appreciate Mamdani's ability to moderate and appease diverse coalitions in New York City. I feel like running for mayor in New York, like, it is, I like so proudly say, because I was born and raised in Queens, like, it is one of the most diverse places in like the world. Like, you have to have a lot of conflicting views in order to appease your base. And he's done such a great job at doing so. Do I think he's going to do a perfect job at housing? No, I still don't believe in rent caps. I think they are very political feasible. I think they're very politically popular. But I think in the long run, it is not going to do much for the supply crisis that we have in New York City. But I can say that I appreciate his ability to understand where the YIMBYs were coming from, because not that many people are able to operate on that. It's the same thing you said with Cheryl. She said it was like incredibly unpopular. There was like that deciding to win paper that came out a couple weeks ago. And like, again, it was the same thing where some of the policies that we advocate for are still not popular. And it's like, well, that's our job then. Our job is to get out there and explain to people why this is popular. You can't just like, because you believe it is good policy, think it's going to make good politics. Like, you can't get lazy halfway and decide like your job is just done. Like, that's just not
lecturing people about how stupid they are and how obvious it is. We need to build more housing because supply and demand was something that Adam Smith figured out like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. That doesn't work. You can't do that. You can't just lecture people and yell at them.
Sir. That's another thing that Mamdani did so well, is that he was nice. Have you ever interacted with a leftist online? Oh my God. They're so mean.
They're so mean.
The amount of profanity that they could put in 280 characters is like shocking, absurd. Like, you guys could do such a better job at building a grassroots movement by just being nicer to people.
You win more with honey than with vinegar. You know?
Yeah.
Get people over with honey than vinegar. Try that. Zoran figured it out. Okay, I want to get to the mailbag segment. Just first, really quick, I saw one tweet from yours I need to follow up on, because this FYPod is educational for me. I try to learn things, learn new terms, and learn about new subcultures I don't know about. You posted this. I need the woke fit male content creators to start dropping, hey, isn't it wild this guy won on lowering costs, but is doing the opposite? What is that, a thing? Woke fit male content creators?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. You're saying you want that to be a thing.
Yeah, I would love. Okay, so it's my whole thing. Like, right after the election happened, people were like, oh my God, we are in a podcast crisis. Like, the libs are left, like, all we got are like Hassan Piker, who should not be a representative, like the main representative of the Democratic Party. I'm sorry. And we just realized we need more podcasters, but you can't do it in a way where you just have DNC talking bots that are just going out there and speaking approved messaging. Like, then we're learning no lessons. I was quote tweeting a piece saying, I fell down some alt-right pipeline because the fitness influencers I was listening to started giving weird subliminal messaging and like dropping some weird things. You were like, hmm. And I'm like, okay, can we do that though? Like, clearly it worked for some of them.
Got it. Yeah, we need some hot fitness influencers to do YIMBY shit and woke shit. I hear you.
Yeah,
okay, we got to work on that.
Well, anyway, I sent you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I sent the tweet out to I was like, is this a thing? I sent it to a friend. They said no, or they didn't think so. They didn't know, but they did. They found this one guy. I'll put his link in the thing, Jared Schultz, who is doing like bro, lefty, hetero, like thought stuff. So that's
amazing.
That's a start. Yeah. Yeah. So we could, you know, whatever. There's a market for it. He's doing
the men who haven't, you know, decided to just hate women and minorities to just like, you know, start making some videos. If you're good looking, like get a camera, get like a selfie light, like post about your protein, like regime and all that stuff. And then like, you know, once in a while, I'll be like, wow, protecting healthcare is really cool, right? And then just like, go on. As if you said nothing. Like you just
straight
like
guys. We're talking to straight guys. There are already plenty of shirtless gays posting lib shit. We don't need any more. We're at capacity.
And I appreciate every single one of you.
That's great. I appreciate you too. But we're at capacity. So this is a message for hot straight men with muscles who work out.
Yes.
We need you to do and who are also woke. We just need to do a little bit of commentary.
Wasn't there like some like story where like the DNC was like secretly like paying some of those like influencers and they weren't like talking about it? I'm like, hey, maybe the DNC will send you a secret check.
Yeah, maybe get a secret check. Harry Sisson's been going to the gym. He was our first. Okay. He was our first two-time guest before you. He obviously beat you because the president pooped on him via AI. So he was going to obviously.
I can't level with that.
No. You can't. Yeah, that's hard to compete with. But he's been doing some bicep curls. Okay, we're going to keep working on that. Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get to the mailbag? You've been waiting to pop off on.
Ooh, do I have any hot takes that I've been waiting to pop off on? Oh my god, this is a very funny thing that I saw online. I don't subscribe to it. I believe in the freedom of speech. Blah blah blah. Anyway, China has decided that if you are an influencer speaking on a subject that needs expertise backgrounds, you will be fined if you do not have that background to speak on it. And I was like, wow, that's hilarious. Imagine if the US started fining people 100K if influencers started speaking about theory and had no backing on it. I'm like, what a world we would live in.
The Chinese seem to be dominating us in the influence game. I mean, Hassan is over there right now doing CCP agitprop.
Did you see the tweet he had?
I mean, it's hard. There's a couple bad ones.
I know. So many. There was one that was insane. He was like, I'm out here in China. It looks like abundance infrastructure out there. And then I'm looking at a state-controlled economy. And then I get to go to the Gucci store. And I was like, what? It was just like such a... I'm like, this is the guy that we've just like, okay.
China is bad, people. The grocery stores in Russia are not anything special. And China's economy has improved. There's some improving stuff, but you know, it still is not a free country. And they're still cracking down on minorities and on opinions that you're not allowed to give. And like the worst shit that the Trump administration is doing, which is bad, is like every day in China on the speech crackdown. So anyway, glad you're enjoying yourself though on little vacay. All right, mailbag time. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. This one's a couple weeks old because Cameron went on hiatus. So it's been sitting in my inbox. So who knows if this relationship is even still happening anymore, but it's still fun. Longtime listener, first time writer. I'm looking for a little life advice. I've been on a few dates with this med student who's smart, funny, and has a huge heart. He also looks like he'd have a promising career in the adult film industry if medicine doesn't work out, if you know what I mean. Okay. I didn't see any red flags until yesterday when politics came up. He shared that he didn't vote last year, but that he would have voted for Trump. Harris, he said, would have accomplished nothing, but at least Trump does stuff. He goes on to list a little bit of their exchange on various issues where he defended Trump. Writer goes on, I can be friends with someone with such views, but building a life with them is another matter. We view politics and morality in fundamentally different ways. I'm not sure how to reconcile the care with which he approaches his work with his disregard for people's rights. What do you think? Should I be able to live with these differences, or should I decide we're fundamentally incompatible? I hate to let politics dictate my relationships, but I know it would become a point of contention. Tower Hoops.
I just feel like if you are already writing that into a political YouTube show, your answer is right there. Clearly, you care about politics enough where you had to like put your thoughts down and reach out to some pundits to get your like the feedback on this. Like, it's not going to work out. I'm so sorry. I think you can. Also, I think like Trump 2 is so different than Trump 1, where like I think some relationships maybe could have survived. I think the COVID pandemic really just stopped Trump from doing a lot of the things that he wanted to do. But I also think like if you have seen the things that he is doing, like even just from like an economic side, let's forget about, you know, like the ICE torturing. Let's forget that.
Right.
Even just like the insanity that is happening every day. And you look at that, you're like, now I would like to start supporting him. I didn't vote for him yet, but now is the time. I want this guy on my side. It's like, then I would be a little worried off that. I think clearly if this is something that she is bringing up now, it's never going to get better. And I agree with her that it is a bit worrying that he is seeing what is happening and is also a medical doctor. So I just hope he's good at his job. I don't care if my doctors have good bedside manner, whatever, as long as you make me healthy, go crazy. But she cares. That's it.
This was my fault because I degendered it, but it is a boy. These are gays.
Oh.
Even the same. The vice doesn't change, though.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Still.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe it's I don't know. Pronouns weren't given, so you never know these days. I went ahead and asked Dan Savage, of my friend, who's an expert advice giver, what he thinks. And his, okay. I expected that was going to be your answer because it was basically my answer. I was surprised that Dan gave a little bit of a different view that I think it's worth us all listening to. Dan's torn. On the one hand, I don't think people who support Trump deserve any dick at all. On the other hand, this guy sounds like he hasn't thought deeply about any of this. While some people are too far gone to have sense fucked into them, some people can be reached. This dude sounds young, and it's possible someone he likes and who floods his body with oxytocin and other things on the I don't know what that is. What's oxytocin?
I didn't know either.
We'll find out in the comments. Okay. On the regular, might inspire him to reconsider his political beliefs, which actually sound more like assumptions or defaults than firmly held beliefs. We can make a distinction, I think, between Rick Grinnell and young guys who haven't thought deeply and can be reached. There's a long way to go before you get to the making a life stage. I think he can fuck this guy with a clear conscience so long as he keeps engaging with him and challenging him. If the boy doesn't come around, he can end things long before the make a life stage rolls around. Classic gay guy feedback. Keep on. I mean, he's hot. Sounds like keep on banging him for a few more weeks or months. See how it goes. If it
also,
doesn't,
what's
you
the
know,
age here too. Are they just having fun? It seemed like the note was like considering like a long term life with them.
Yeah. Well, he said at the beginning, I've been on a few dates. We're at the few, and he's a med student.
Okay.
So we're assuming context clues, 20s, probably your age, probably. And it's like, you know. It's not that they're gay. It's not like they have a biological clock ticking or anything.
No. I mean, go forth and prosper. If you feel happy and you feel safe in that environment, like, go crazy. Yeah. Do I think you have a life with this man? No. You wrote a letter already voicing your doubts about this man after a few dates. I don't think you're magically going to fall in love with him now.
I don't think he's going to magically change his politics after just because of a little bit of dick either. But I appreciated Dan Savage's rare optimism. And I wanted to inject it, so to speak, into this pod. All right. Tara Hoops. Wonderful. Thank you for doing this trial run with me. First, you know, Cam hiatus show. It was lovely to do this with you. Everybody else, I don't really know when the next episode is going to be. We're doing our best out here, okay? So keep subscribed. Subscribe to FYI Pod on YouTube because there's going to be more shit. We just don't know exactly what yet. And you know it's going to be good. So subscribe. Keep an eye out for it. Keep your eye on the other Bulwark stuff in the meantime. And when we have an announcement, we'll do it. Does that sound good? Follow Tara on Twitter too. She's posting. Sure. She has a posting habit, and you might as well encourage that a little bit. I appreciate you, girl. Everybody else, we'll see y'all soon. Peace.
Thank you.